Okay, we will begin this informal hearing. Both these cases are with Otter Tail Power. It is February 22nd, 2023 at about 1:32 p.m. Unless there's a reason to start with the second case first, I think we'll start with the first case first, and that is case number PU-22-429. That's the renewable resource cost recovery adjustment factor. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission, joined by Commissioners Haugenhoffert and Fedorchak. So we have, I guess we don't need a quorum on the informal, really, but we do have one anyway. I don't have any opening comments, do you?
No, I don't. Can you guys hear us okay?
Okay. Yes, we can.
So,
thank you.
We've been identified now for everybody around the table.
Victor Shook with staff.
Rob Frank with staff.
Chris Hansen, staff.
Brian Johnson, staff.
And who do we have from Otter Tail today?
Stuart Tomerdahl.
Bruce Gerhardson.
Amber Stahlberger.
Paula Foster.
Emily Kettleson. Oh, sorry, Paula. It's okay.
Okay, so we got Paula and...
Emily.
Emily. Okay, this is an informal hearing. I just want to emphasize it involves only undisputed facts. If there are disputed facts, we'll have to wrap it up and issue a notice of hearing, and the applicant goes first in these things, so I will turn it over to whoever wants to lead off.
Randy, I'm wondering if you could have them give what their positions are, because some of them are new. I haven't worked with some of them before.
But before you start, would you go through, if you didn't hear that, and tell us what your positions are within Otter Tail?
Certainly. I'm Stuart Tomerdahl. I'm manager of regulatory economics.
Bruce Gerritsen, vice president of regulatory.
Amber Stahlberger, manager of regulatory analysis.
Paula Foster, supervisor of regulatory analysis.
Emily Kettleson, rights analyst.
Okay, go right ahead. We have, by the way, a paper presentation that I'm presuming came from you in front of us.
Correct. Thank you, commissioners. Will you be sharing the presentation up on the screen or? There we go. All right. Again, thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to join you today remotely as we wait for Snowmageddon to move through our region here. We appreciate, that we can do it this way. Obviously, we would like to be out there and visit with you in person, but safety being forefront of what we want to focus on, I think we can achieve what we all hope to achieve today in this forum. I'm going to be walking through the presentation primarily myself today. If you could advance to the agenda slide, page 2. I'll give you a little bit of an overview of how we're going to work through the presentation. On the next slide, I will have just a summary of the requests that we've put forth in the two cases. And then the next eight slides or so.
I think Stuart, it would be good, though, for the record, to keep the cases separate. So we might have to, like some of these slides where you mentioned both, maybe if we can do the 22-429 first, and might have to kind of skip back and forth a little bit. But I think the record should be clear.
We can do that, Commissioner Christman, certainly. Thanks. So I'll highlight the first case on off of slide 3. We'll go through the renewable rider filing. There's a number of slides associated with that to help you orientate to what we're requesting there. We do have some summary information at the end that's going to kind of tie both of these together. You know, certainly, and what that's going to do is ultimately look at a customer bill impact for a customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours. We've got, you know, some different proposals going on here. We're kind of looking at them in totality. And so towards the end, there is, you know, a couple of summary slides that are dealing with kind of both cases. And we do address the, you know, kind of what the overall bill impact will be.
Okay.
The next slide, and we can touch on the renewable rider. In this case, you know, it's a standard update to, you know, an annual update to that rider. We're seeking approval of the renewable rider factor that's proposed, along with the associated revenue requirement. That rate is proposed to be effective April 1 of 2023. The one nuance in this year's update is, you know, we are requesting proposed changes to the E2 jurisdictional allocation factors. And this is both for the 2022 and 23 time periods, you know, that will align jurisdictional sales and revenues upon which the rider applies. So let's move on to the next slide. And we'll start getting into the details of the renewable rider filing. Next slide, please. We didn't talk a lot about this in the beginning, you know, in the renewable rider filing, but there is some context that we want to make sure the commission is mindful of. You know, we've got two generation facilities that are in, you know, the rider that we're getting recovery on. You know, they are producing.
We lost you, if you can hear us.
Your audio's cut out.
Hello?
Oh, there we go.
You're back now.
Hello.
Last we heard was they are producing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as the slide indicates, you know, we're getting zero cost energy, you know, in our renewable rider from these facilities. And so we just want to kind of keep that in the back of our mind that, you know, while in our renewable rider, we're collecting the cost of these facilities, you know, our customers are realizing, you know, a benefit in our fuel clause or our energy adjustment rider. And when we look at for 2023, you know, a customer that's using about 1,000 kilowatt hours a month is going to see about a $3.66 per month reduction as compared to prior PPA or average energy costs that we would have been incurring prior to that. Of that amount, approximately $1.23 is associated with new savings that we're beginning to realize through the energy adjustment rider from the Ashtabula 3 facility. So,
Stuart?
Well, yep.
This is Julie. Could you just kind of high level walk through how you calculate that savings in that bolded paragraph?
Certainly, Commissioner. Basically, what we're doing is we're looking at the expected output of those facilities on a per megawatt hour basis. We know that we look at what our average, you know, fuel or market cost would be if we didn't have those resources. Or in the case of the Ashtabula facility, we used to have a PPA with that facility. Now that we own that, the PPA has gone away. So we're quantifying the value of that PPA costs that we're now avoiding against the expected output of the facility.
And then the expected output, where do you get that? Is that based on like the last 5-year average, or how do you come up with that amount, that term?
Yeah, I mean, we look at historical, you know, generation averages, what we've got embedded in, you know, forecasts internally, in terms of estimating fuel clause costs, you know, going forward for 23. So.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. The last point on this slide is you know, again, just a reminder that when we set the rates in the last rider update filing, the renewable rider filing, those rates were established on revenues that contemplated material load growth in 2022, but they didn't reflect the change in cost allocations associated with that load growth. We'll touch on that topic in a little bit later in our presentation here as well, but just kind of wanted to set some context from a rider perspective. You could move to slide 6.
Stuart, I have a question. This is Sherry. When you talk about the two wind generation facilities, you're talking about Ashtabula and the Langdon Wind?
It's, Commissioner, it's Maricourt.
Oh,
Ashtabula. We'll be touching on these in the subsequent slides here in
okay.
a little bit more detail.
Okay, thank you.
But before I go on, Stuart, another question on page 5 there. When you're talking about the load growth, are you talking about mostly the data processing center? Is that the...
That would be a significant okay. part of it.
Okay, thank you.
Slide 6, please. So this slide just summarizes the different components that are in the renewable rider. As I mentioned earlier, we've got the Maricourt Wind Energy Center that we're getting recovery of in this rider, as well as, you know, the associated production tax credits that facility is generating. And those are being levelized over the life of the project. And that's continues to be consistent with what, you know, the commission ordered back in 2019. We are seeing in this annual update a full year recovery of the Ashtabula 3 project. We just completed the acquisition of that back on January 3rd. And, you know, we did have about 3 months of recovery for January, February, and March in last year's filing and the current rate. But, you know, now we're going to see a full year, a full 12 months when you look at the next 12-month recovery period. The other elements that are in the rider, we continue to true up what we call these deferred tax asset balances. When we had our rate case, we had a certain amount of production tax credits that we still hadn't utilized back at that time of the rate case, and this would have been for our Langdon and our other Ashtabula wind farm. Subsequent to that, we've utilized those production tax credits, and so that asset balance has been reducing over time, and so we credit or we make an adjustment in our rider filing here to adjust for that change in revenue requirement. We'll show you the amounts in the next, in the coming slide here. And then we have the true-up balances associated with carrying charges and carrying charges from prior periods. And as I mentioned earlier, this proposal, looks to update the jurisdictional allocation factors. And again, we have a couple of slides a little bit later that I'll get into more detail on those impacts. Slide 7, please. I wanted to give you a little bit of background relative to, you know, what we're currently requesting in this annual update. as you can see on the left, here are the primary elements from this year's update. You know, and
we lost you there again, Stuart. Still can't hear you, sorry.
Can anybody else on our end hear me?
We hear you now.
Okay. Okay, sorry about that. We have about $17 million in revenue requirement in this annual filing. The proposed rate goes from a little over 7% of base revenue to about 15%, 15.54. And again, I mentioned earlier, we're proposing recovery period beginning April 1. The table on the left, I wanted to give you a little bit of a history going back to at least 2020 on where the renewable rider rate has been and what have been the main drivers during that time frame. You know, back in 2020 was during the period of time where we were in the construction phase of AmeriCorps, and so we were beginning to get recovery during that construction phase for the return on the CWIP on that project. That project went into service at the end of 2020, and so our 2021 rate would have reflected AmeriCorps being in service and us beginning to get full recovery along with the levelized PTCs that the facility was beginning to generate. And so we saw at that point in time, the rate jumped up to about, a little over 11.8% of base bill. Last year, we saw a decline in the rate to the rate that's currently in effect at 7.108%, and the drivers that affected that last year were, one, we had extended the depreciation life on AmeriCorps from 25 to 35 years, so that, reduced the depreciation expense and costs associated with that. We also had some relatively significant renewable energy credit, REC sales, that rolled back through the rider. Recovery period,
Stuart, did you have more RECs to sell for some reason, or was the price just high?
It escapes. I think it was more on volume than on price. I don't remember the specifics behind that, but. It was a more material amount last year. I think it was in the neighborhood of $900,000 that went back. And then the other element, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, when we set the rate last year, we did, our revenue forecast that the rate was based on, did anticipate a higher from a load growth perspective. And then, as we roll forward to this year's rate and proposed rate, we've continued to recover AmeriCorps. We're now going to have a full year of Ashtabula 3, 12 months of recovery on that. And then our other proposal is in terms of, updating the allocation factor.
Stuart, regarding the REC sales, this is Julie again. From last year compared to this year, was there rec sales this year? I don't recall reading that in the filing. It might have been in there.
I believe there was some. I know the amount was less. I don't know if Paula or Emily remember that amount or could look that up for us here. But I believe there was some that are being credited through again this year. we can come back to that
okay.
question.
That sounds fair. Thank you.
Can we advance to slide 8, please? So I touched on those main elements that are being recovered. Here are the... There you go, slide 8. These are the main elements that are being recovered. You can see the true-up amounts for those deferred tax assets for Langdon and the previous Ashtabula system. We have the revenue requirement that's applicable to Maricourt Wind, and then we have the revenue requirement associated with the Ashtabula 3 wind farm. And again, these are the revenue requirements from April through next March, so for that 12-month recovery period. Next slide, please. So that $14.5 million is that current period revenue requirement. And then we have the associated true up and carrying charge that make up the difference that gets us to the $17 million total revenue requirement. And that true up, these amounts are reflective of our proposed change to the allocation factor. Okay. And
Stuart, really quick,
yes.
What, on the previous slide, the DTA, what does that mean? Langdon DTA true up to base rate amounts?
Yeah. It's deferred tax asset.
I got it.
Yep.
So those are some of the PTCs that you hadn't used. Right?
Correct.
Okay, got
yep.
it. All right, sorry. I was stuck on that, yep. So now I'll move ahead.
So our total revenue requirement detail is listed here. The true-up, you know, close to $2.4 million. You know, roughly 1.9 of that true-up is associated with the proposed allocation factor change, and that is quantifying the effect of that allocation factor change from January of 22 through March of 23. Okay, so roughly 1.9 million of that is for that particular time period. The other, you know, the collections, other updates, I should note the carrying charge change is also in $460,000 adjustments there. So that's a little bit more detail on the $2.4 million true-up amount.
Okay, Stuart, on that 2.4, how much did you say has to do with that allocation,
1.9 for that... For the January to March time frame, January 22 through March of 23.
On page 8 of the application, I thought it said 4.4 million.
Correct. This is just for the true-up period. There's probably another 2.3 million, 2.4 million that would be attributable to the April through March of next year time frame.
Oh, okay.
So that's where you get to the roughly the 4.4 million.
So that...
Attachment 2 kind of shows the difference between, you know, no change to the allocation factor and a change to the allocation factor.
Attachment and 2 of this handout that we got today, or
the
of the filing.
Can I, while Randy's looking at that, can I ask a question about the dates here? When did that new load come on? I don't feel like it was in January. So it wouldn't, doesn't seem like, maybe time flies, but it doesn't seem like it's been a whole year.
It was in Q1 of when we started seeing, you know, load changes. I think maybe February is when they first started, you know, seeing, and it ramped up during the course of the year. And so we've got, and we'll get into in a couple more slides, a little more detail on the factors between what's applicable to 2022 and what we're anticipating for 2023.
All right.
Going forward.
Stuart, if I can interject on that one, just, 2022 is based on the total kWh consumed by the new customer. So it's a smaller amount because of that in the early months and in the year 2022.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I'm still not putting something together. I thought that the whole request was for the $17 million, that was the net amount of this request. Am I wrong?
That's correct. That is the amount of the request.
Okay, so if the request is $17 million, and on page 8 of this handout you're going through today, it shows the two new wind farms minus the true ups is 14.5 of that 17.
Correct.
And then the next page carries that over, adds a carrying charge and this true up, and only 1.9 of it is for the allocation.
1.9. Commissioner Christman, 1.9 is the portion of the true-up that's applicable to the allocation factor change. The total impact of the allocation factor change is about $4.3 million. And I'll touch on that on the next slide.
So the 1.9 is just from last year to this March, which wasn't collected in the existing rate. So we're chewing it up. That's what the 1.9 is. All right.
Correct.
Let me make a stab at cleaning this up a little bit. So on slide 8, there are portions.
I think you're kind of far from your microphone.
Yeah. On slide 8, there are portions of that, of line 3 and 4. Of the 12.2 and 3.5 million that would be attributable to the allocation increasing as well.
Yes.
If that's kind of helpful. Because I think what Commissioner Christman's trying to get to is that 4.4. Where can I see that total? Because we're saying on slide 9, there's 1.9. Where's the other 2.4?
Right.
And what I would say is it's within that 12.2 and 3.5.
For the year going forward.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. That was very helpful. I hope I remember.
Victor can read Randy's mind.
I've been focused on this for a while.
Let's go on to slide 10. Okay. And again, this just... reflects and summarizes the change in the rate and how the rate is calculated. And so, we identified the $17 million revenue requirement for the recovery period. It's a little over $109 million of forecasted base revenue for all customers. And, the simple math is $17 million is that's what the percentage is of that revenue, and 15.5 is the rate. What that equates to is an approximately $5.77 per month increase for a customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours. And just as a point of reference, You know, for that level of usage, you know, the charge would go up from around $487 to $1064 per month on a base bill of, you know, $68.46. The next slide.
Before you move on, Stuart, I do want to remind the commissioners what you just said, or what you said at the very beginning, is that when we look at that bill impact, it is ignoring the impact of that there's a reduction to the FCA. So a customer will not see that impact. That will be the impact of the renewable rider, but there's a corresponding reduction to FCA. So if you looked at that, if I were you, I would be looking at that number. If that was all we were talking about, I would say, wow, that's a fairly large amount. But that's not what customers will see. They'll see that minus the positive impact, meaning a reduction to the FCA.
Just this year, though, Bruce, right?
The reduction of the FCA will continue on because it's for the life of the project. Remember, by buying these, let's say we'll use Ash Tabula as Ash 3 as the example. By buying it, we're able to avoid paying a PPA price. So here you're seeing, in a sense, the cost of the buying it, but you're not seeing the reduction to the FCA we get by not having to pay the
PPA
price.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was confusing this with the additional reduction you're proposing from the auction revenues. Sorry.
From the auction revenue, that's another reduction later we'll talk about. Even if we weren't proposing that, this would overstate the amount of bill impact. So I just want, Stuart mentioned that at the very beginning of the presentation, but again, if I were you, I'd look at $5. I'd say that's a material amount. That would be incorrect to see it in isolation. There is a corresponding FCA reduction because we can avoid paying the PPA price.
So, but go ahead.
What's the timing of when we do the fuel cost adjustment?
That's adjusted on a monthly basis.
Can you?
On that point, though, Bruce, they saw that same adjustment last year. It just didn't include the Ash Tabula. Is that what you're saying? So there's like $1.23 additional this year?
Yeah.
It's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. The $1.23 is new this year. That wouldn't have been in there.
There is one additional thing to bring up that it gets complicated is they did also, there's another thing that's happening that is the little bit of we showed the volumes, meaning that we had more volumes to spread the rate across last year because of the addition of the new blockchain customer. So that sort of artificially lowered the rate last year. It's a separate issue, but it sort of artificially lowers the rate because we're spreading the same amount of costs over more KWH. Now this year, to get the allocation factor back up, there's sort of a artificially low last year, getting back to normal this year on that. So there's two things that Stuart had mentioned earlier that you want to keep in mind. So those two phenomena are going into that 577. So I want to pause for a minute, and Stuart, if you don't mind, and ask the commissioners if those are concepts. I know we are really into a lot of math and a lot of economics here, but I want to make sure two things. One is the way the rider and the FCA works, and then secondly, that allocation factor and the volume impact. So is that clear?
It makes sense to me, Bruce.
Okay.
I'm not saying I like it, but it makes sense.
One thing I don't want to lose is that both of those things are very positive things, okay? So being able to buy Ash 3, for example, very positive, reduces rates. Customers will pay lower than if we didn't do that.
Yep.
The second thing is a very positive addition of that blockchain loan, where they were seeing a lot of positive benefit last year in the reduction to rates because of larger volumes, meaning we can spread our costs over more, but they didn't get a larger, in a sense, an appropriately larger share of those costs. So it was those, I just don't want to lose two really positive things that will be rate reducing over time and now. Because this is, I guess I don't want you to lose sight of those two factors. But why don't we let Stuart go on, and we'll just try and keep them in mind for you, so you see the full picture here.
Move on to slide 11. Next two slides are going to just kind of focus a little bit on the allocation factor proposal. Well, historically, we haven't, sought or had, factors change between rate cases and our riders. And when you look back historically, from the period of 2010 through 2017, that E factor was held at 41.018%. In our last general rate case, that was reset down to 37.577%. That's the rate that has been in effect and we've utilized in the rider, since January 1 of 2018. In this filing, the rates or the factors that we're proposing that were forecasted were for the 22 period 41.78%, and then for 23, and we carried that through the first quarter of 24, it would be again a little bit higher at 43.489%. Commissioner Christman mentioned earlier, the total revenue requirement increase is approximately $4.3 million from updating these factors. And that covers the full January 1 of 22 through March of 2024. So it's a 27-month period. These are estimates, and we make these changes, we do, commit to updating to whatever the actuals end up being in subsequent filings. So we're viewing this sort of a shift in how we're looking at it is that we want to make sure that we are getting to the actuals. And if there's any true up attributable to that, we're definitely, committed to doing that. And the other thing that we want to mention just from an Otter Tail overall system perspective is we do see some potential additional load changes across our system, both, in North Dakota and our other jurisdictions in the next couple of years. And, we could see further requests to, adjust these factors going forward, and in some cases it could be up, other cases it could be down, depending on if and when some of these potential other load changes occur. So that's another element we just want to keep in mind and let you know that that's a context that we're working in. If we go to the next slide,
Hold on. I'm going to use the current factor, and I admit I never have focused much on this allocation factor. So currently, you've got this down to the 1/1000%, so it's not just a random number. Am I right that for Otter Tail, Minnesota is pretty close to the same as ours, and South Dakota would be the balance then?
That's correct. I mean, North Dakota and Minnesota are getting closer. Looking at that factor back when the 37% was set, Minnesota was probably a little bit over 50%.
Oh, okay.
At that point in time.
Do we recalculate this every year as part of riders, or how far like I say, it's down to the thousandth of a percent, so it must change all the time. How far do you let it go before you seek an adjustment to it?
Well, I think we're at that point in time right now, where at least within, you know, a rider, you know, we're looking to make that change. Obviously, all of our base rates were set and are still in place at the, you know, the 37% allocation factor, you know, for those costs that are allocated on that factor. And,
you know, Stuart, chime in too, is just there's two things that are very unusual that, and that's why we've got these two proceedings going that we haven't seen previously. One is the kind of material change that we saw with the addition of the blockchain mode. That's really what does it. Normally, we haven't seen material change in between cases. It's very incremental. It would be, and why do we calculate for the small decimals? Because the changes have historically been in the decimal places, not in the larger numbers. So that's one thing that's occurred recently that's quite unusual. The second thing is, of course, the capacity auction revenues that we'll all talk about in a minute on the other case. So we're trying to kind of bring in two things that we haven't historically done, but because it's because of two things that are not typical.
And is the North Dakota share, is that based on the amount of megawatt hours you sell in our jurisdiction as opposed to the others, or on revenues, or how do you get to that?
Correct. It's based on megawatt hour, kilowatt hour sales across our three states.
Okay, thank you.
And
one little clarification.
Surprise for the record.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Did Victor want to say something?
Go ahead, Bruce.
I was just going to say, you know, for the record, this is only based on the E2 factor. There are demand factors and other factors. This rider uses the E2 factor, and so that's the one that's changing. But anyway, Victor.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
Slightly different. But
out of curiosity, what's the demand factor at right now? Ballpark figure? Are they similar?
One thing that...
I think it's in the upper 40s, mid-40s.
One thing that it might be worth mentioning is that when we added the new load, that is a very low demand but high energy customer, meaning because they can be interrupted for most of their consumption. They don't impact the demands very much, but they impact the energy a lot.
Got it. And why, just out of curiosity again, why the E2? What's the 2?
There's a couple different allocation factors that are based on energy, and that's just our name of the particular one that's used for this. We've got two demand factors, a couple of energy factors.
Got it.
Several.
Okay.
There's a question for Vic. Do all our multi-state utilities use the same formula to calculate their allocation between the states?
It's a similar calculation between all of them. I couldn't say off the top of my head if it's exactly the same between all of them, but...
At the end, each utility has to get all their states to agree to the same formula, or it wouldn't equal 100.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. It could equal 99, or it could equal 102. It's a very good point. I've thought about that a lot over the years. But it's a good little segue to a question I have. Are you asking to change the allocator for your recovery of these resources in Minnesota and South Dakota at the same time?
Yeah, a good question. We just had a change in one of our riders in South Dakota. They had asked us to incorporate an updated factor there, and we are committed across all our jurisdictions when you know the time comes to make these changes when they are material.
Yeah, it's probably worth mentioning that we've looked at that in Minnesota. We actually went through a more sort of a wide scale formula adjustment proposal that they didn't like. We are considering whether we'll do what we're proposing here, which is ask for the rider to be updated. There's an interesting phenomenon there is that because Minnesota, it would increase Minnesota's rider allocation, meaning the rates in their rider, if we reduce the allocation in that case, because they have more PTC credits in the rider than they have costs. So a smaller rider means a smaller minus sign number. Does that make sense?
A smaller percentage.
So we may do it.
Yeah. Sure.
It's sort of a weird phenomenon at the moment.
It almost seems like it would have to be simultaneously changed so that to prevent under or over recovery.
But everyone doesn't have to agree on the same amounts. I mean, that
partly it has not been simultaneous. We historically it's been whenever we've gotten them done, that we tend to go one to the next in over the course of years. Like Victor said, there can be some amount of difference between the 100%. Sometimes it's 100.5, or sometimes it's 99.5. But the overall question is still, are the rates right in the state we're asking? But there can be some amount of timing difference.
Okay, you can continue.
All right, let's move on to slide 11. And as I mentioned earlier, slide 12. Kind of wanted to reduce or again quantify what the impact is to a customer using 1,000 kilowatt hours. And so the table on the right there, you know, our current rate is about 7.11%. And we had included this in attachment 3 in our initial filing, but if we weren't proposing the allocation factor change, the rate would be set at about 11.58%. Now that rate is still being set on higher revenues, or you know, the forecasted revenues that we talked about earlier, but that's just basically keeping the 37% allocation factor in there. And so just our normal, you know, cost recovery changes, adding Ashtabula in for the full year, those kinds of things, any other sort of true up differences would equate to about $3.06 of that $5.77 increase, if that makes sense.
Can you say that again, Stuart?
Sure. On the table there on the right, we say the incremental impact in a bill for a customer's bill would be about $3.06 if we didn't do any change to the allocation factor. Okay? We've updated our costs, we've updated collections. Now that rate is again, you know, based on the higher sales volumes, which includes, you know, all of you know, our load increase. The rate we're proposing goes up to 15.54%, so roughly $2.71 of the rate impact is attributable to the allocation factor. And again, that's covering 27 months of impact, going back to January of 22 through, you know, the end of March of 2024. So there is a, you know, that true up, you know, the factor change does have a, you know, it is covering a longer period of time.
Do you have an estimate how
artificially low you think the rate was last year, and does that, the E2 change, pretty much equate with that? Or is that kind of, where's your estimate on that?
Well, I guess what I could say is, I think if we didn't have that revenue for this year's, in this year, the calculation of this year's rate, I think that, and keeping the allocation factor where it was at, I think it penciled out in the maybe a 13.2%. So I think it might be, in the neighborhood of 2 percentage points, maybe a little bit less.
Yeah, can I, this is probably piling on the same point, but when I look at the, in this table on slide 12, I look at line 2, the $3 impact, one of the things is that's looking at this in isolation, I would attribute the corresponding reduction to FCA to that number. And then when I look at the change in volumes resulting in a lower rate last year, I would attribute that impact to the impact on line 3. So there is a positive going along with both of those quote-unquote negatives that are somewhat hidden by us looking at this in isolation in this table. The customers paid less starting last year because of those large volumes. So that's why 3 looks higher than it is. And then we do see a lower amount in the FCA that is the amount customers see related to that line too. I think that's a fair way to look at it, right, Stuart?
Yes.
Yep. But this is not inaccurate. This is what's changing to the rider rate. So that's why those numbers are the important ones.
Any other questions on this case?
I have some more. Bruce, you were suggesting earlier, I think, and maybe I misapplied your comments to this, but you were saying how this larger customer and their increased energy use is benefiting the customers, but I sure don't see that here. Like, this is significantly increasing costs, the rate for all of the customers on this renewable rider.
Commissioner Fedorchak, that is correct this year, and it's because we began showing the volumes last year. So that big step down from 11 to 7, I think it was, on that previous slide, that's because we started to show the benefit of the volumes last year. Now, should we have showed the benefit of the volumes and the change to the allocator in a single year? Probably. So it's the phenomenon is we go down artificially low last year. Now we're sort of getting it back in sync where the volumes and the allocator are based on the same number. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't. I don't okay. see the benefit.
So I'll take a stab and see if I can read Julie's mind this time. So I think what I think Ottertail's trying to say is...
Which page are you on, though?
There's a couple of different pages that list this. So I'm on slide 12 right now. So if we look at the 11.58% would have been the rate without a factor change. That is similar to what the rate was, not last year, but the year before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if we go back, slide 7 actually has those as I'm trying to kind of lay them out. I think what I'm kind of hearing is had we adjusted the allocation factor at the same time that we made the adjustment to the usage assumptions coming
Wait
from
a minute.
That new large customer.
How How do the usage assumptions affect the renewable rider rate calculation?
When we have an amount of costs, let's say we have $1 million and we can spread them over 1 million kilowatt hours, we know what that'll result in, right? But if we add 500,000, and these are not the right numbers, you add, okay, now we can spend $1 million over 1.5 million kilowatt hours, it reduces the per kilowatt hour amount that the rate is, right?
So, okay.
So we spread a set amount of costs over a larger amount of kilowatt hours last year. That's why the rate goes down.
Yep.
But that was somewhat artificial because with that large new customer, there's an increased share of cost. So those two things should have gone together.
So you didn't, last year we didn't include their increased energy use.
In the allocation factor. Correct.
Right. Okay.
We spread the costs more broadly to the greater number of kilowatt hours, but we didn't change the costs. We probably created a problem by waiting and doing it this year, in the sense that it now looks like we were very low last year, and now we have to increase to get those two things in sync. So
because we under-recovered last year, too, because we didn't account for their larger usage.
That is correct. If we had allocated more, we should have collected more.
Right.
So if you made that mistake, you should pay.
So can I ask a question? On some of those big users, are we seeing in some cases where I thought they would be responsible for the costs? So I think kind of I had the same confusion as Julia. You would think that those big users, instead of expenses, it would like help. Instead, sure. We're seeing it flipped on its head. So sure. I guess that was kind of confusing for me too.
Well, it's all in the rate structure and how mm-hmm. it's designed. You know, so Otter Tail's rate structure for this large customer includes them paying all riders as if they're a normal customer. Some others may not propose they pay those riders mm-hmm. and pay in a different way for the system.
And so it depends on individual rates.
Yep. Yep.
To Sherry's point, once we get the volumes and the rate kind of at the right balance, then they will be covering their additional use. I know they're paying for it, but last year the customers kind of saw benefit without, and now we're adjusting that, and so they're going to see an increase, even though they kind of got the benefit last year.
I think if I go back to what I was trying to explain, I think this might help. So in 2021, the rate was 11.825%.
Mm-hmm.
In 2022, we dropped it way mm-hmm. down to 7.108%. Yep. I think what Otter Tail is saying is, had we left it alone last year, it would have been pretty close. May not have been right on, but it would have been much closer to accurate, considering if we had changed the allocator and
had the increased
volumes at that time. And then we would really be talking about now a change from 11.82 to 15.54, which would be largely attributable to adding Ashtabula 3.
Yeah. All right.
This is Chris Hansen. Could I ask this from a different perspective? Have you done an analysis of the net impact from when you brought the blockchain on? What do you think that impact has been overall on the rider?
We do that. And I think that's a question for us and Stuart. I think we submit that annually, don't we? Under their rate. You mean like the net marginal benefit of adding that customer under their current rates?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, Stuart, we submit that, or have we already done so?
No, we will be submitting something with regard to, you know, that customer's impact when we file our annual report later this spring. I know when we got the tariff approved under which we you know, that customer is the rates are priced and what they're paying. You know, we had committed to providing a report as part of our annual report, and so that will be included, you know, when we file that later this spring.
And one other thing, and maybe before we move out of this case, is I think it's related to the next case. What you'll see is Otter Tail is proposing to do a thing that wouldn't normally have occurred there, which will be, although unrelated in many respects, mitigating to those rate impacts that you guys are asking about right now. So in total, that's some of the reason we're putting these two together. I suppose I can take full accountability and say we maybe would have been better to have included the change to the allocation factor last year. But our proposal here is to make that adjustment, plus make the adjustment in the EAR for the capacity revenues, and that'll be net. That'll be neutralizing to the immediate impact, I think. So we can look at those. There's some of the reasons we're putting these things together.
Randy, thank you. That's helpful. I understand now. I do have one more question, and that's just to staff. You know, what do you guys think about this? And you did pose a question, Rob, in your memo to consider, which I think
that should refer more to the cost allocation. Maybe there might need to be a change there, but it seems to be that if it was artificially low last time, I don't know if you're seeing a positive impact from adding the large customer, but it doesn't seem to be affecting it in the other way, and it's more the leg and the E2 allocator that seems to be that
causing significant
that
jump.
Although, I mean, the case was made that it would spread out and lower you would receive a benefit, so, I mean, maybe that has been the case, but haven't closely analyzed that.
So you guys don't have any outstanding concerns with what they're proposing here on this rider?
So I would say largely the calculations and methodologies used to make them are reasonable. I don't have any issues with that. You know, one consideration or a thing that keeps kind of rolling through my mind is when we set the rate for this new customer, let's just be honest, that's the one of the major driving factors of this increase. There was a portion, I'm trying to think about how we identified what this was, but there was essentially a differential between the cost to serve and the standard rate. And there was a portion of that given to the customers a discount and a portion retained for system benefit. And in the absence of a rate case, that system benefit is really Otter Tail's benefit in additional revenues. So
how does that benefit the customer?
Exactly, and that's kind of my only point is Otter Tail is receiving additional revenues up and above its cost to serve this new customer, so it would be feasible for an argument to be made that should be utilized for the benefit of customers.
So is that something that can be considered in this case, though, or is that a tariff issue on that?
That tariff didn't specify what happens to
the revenue.
That revenue? It just set the rate.
Okay.
It's just a thought. I'm not saying that's the appropriate thing for Otter Tail to do. It's just something I've been rattling around.
It would show a clear benefit, though, if they did do some portion of that, right?
And I think that's where my biggest pause was on these large loads, on how we're handling them, to show that there is benefit. I mean, how this impacts all customers. And, we want to attract them. So I have pause there.
I think to the extent that they said that that's something they identify in the annual report, I think that would be a key thing for us going forward for additional large customers, is to see whether the benefit that we anticipated is the benefit that we actually achieved. Yeah. As I'm thinking about this, there could be benefits to customers that may not directly be attributed to the rider as well. So it could be theoretically first on another general rate case or whatever the situation might be too. So we could be negatively impacting customers in a small way here potentially, but having a benefit another way. So I think it's probably something we need to look at when we get that information.
I do think your point is worth further exploration as a part of this case.
Well, I'd be interested in Autotail's response to Victor's point.
I think what I heard was the how are we recognizing or realizing broader benefits, or how are customers realizing broader benefits from this large load? And
now,
and certainly,
hold on,
you know,
Stuart, just to be a little bit more pointed than that, and save you the trouble of going through all the other benefits, there's a net system benefit that you're getting, probably a dollar amount that you guys get to keep. And Victor's point was maybe that should be part of that should be shared with customers.
Go ahead, Stuart.
Well, yeah, I mean, what I want us to keep in mind is certainly Ottertail is recognizing increased base revenues associated with the new load. You know, when we file our annual report in the spring, we do our cost of service assessment against or for 2022. You know, that report is going to reflect on a total system basis shifts in allocations, okay? And so are those revenues, you know, helping Ottertail meet its, you know, on a broader perspective, our overall financial requirements? You know, adding additional load certainly does, you know, shift jurisdictionally costs, but, you know, increased sales and revenues helps, you know, us meet other increases as an organization that we're trying to manage and navigate. You know, and so how do you bring those customer, you know, the rest of our customers a benefit? You know, hopefully these loads are helping us delay a future rate case to keep our existing rates in place and not have to, go in for a rate case sooner. And when we do, having these additional loads should help, all customers. They're going to pay that fair share of that increase and help other customers. So, you know, we look at this in a long-term perspective on what it can do, across our system and for all customers. And so I just want us to kind of keep that perspective in mind, as we think about when do these benefits accrue to other customers. They're not going to all happen at the same time. It's going to even out over time. Hopefully that helps.
It does help. And I guess for me, down the road, when you submit something, it would be interesting to see those points that this large load, where those revenues went, you know, so I mean, I can't speak on the other two, so I could see the impact that it had and where you placed that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can I also just chime in a little bit, you know, from the leadership perspective, it's our commitment. We want these loads for the benefit of our system and our customers long-term. You know that we're small. I mean, I think the commissioners have heard me say many times, second smallest publicly traded utility in the country. So, you know, when we see growth, one thing we get economies of scale. We get them in the shorter run and in the longer run. And so when we work with staff, we'll help to illustrate that. I think the other things that Stuart has said are very much true. I think we're the low-cost provider in the state right now. And that's our goal, to maintain at least as much, in a sense, advantage against other providers of our kind as we can. So our mission is the same as yours there. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but you have my commitment.
I think,
and we can show that. We will show that. I think, you know, there is a little bit of this is more about another case in a sense. This is not the large load case, but it is. Maybe I think that'll be worth examining when we get to our filings with respect to their contribution.
I think so, Bruce. Just to be clear in your what you show us of the benefits to customers, because that was pretty clear in your formula, you know, that we reviewed in approving the tariff, of how it was going to be a net system benefit. The cost to serve was lower than what you were going to make by a lot. So, you know, how, what happens to that money and how that benefits customers, not just shareholders, that's important for us to be able to continue supporting these kinds of things.
Absolutely understood.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, just to follow up to an earlier question you had with regard to renewable energy credits in this filing. You know, in 2022, there was about $213,000, the North Dakota, you know, benefit of some renewable energy credit sales. So,
okay, good. Thank
you. Just wanted to follow up on that.
Are those becoming more or less valuable as the years go by, or is that a pretty stable market?
They've increased in value, Stuart. I think they should be worth twice what they were a couple years ago.
Did you say twice what they were a couple years ago?
Double? I think so. I used to think in terms of a buck, and I think they're now worth a couple.
Okay, thank you. Anything else?
Is that Stuart? I mean, I am a little shooting off the cuff here, so I didn't go examine that, but I think that's the case.
I don't have those numbers handy.
Anything else on this case? Are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record?
No objection on Otter Tail's part.
No objection from staff.
Okay, so the evidence will become part of the record upon which a decision is made, and that includes both the recording as well as the paperwork that was handed out. Are there any other matters for the record in this case? I'm not hearing anything. So we will close this case, and Matt, would you stop the recording and start a new one, please?